Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. So, Ms. Sinclair suggested that we might want to look at fear and dread again. Does that seem a reasonable occupation? Which would take us to page 102. Aren't you all glad you bought this text? Pretty neat text, isn't it? I think it's very beautiful. Nobody saw that, did they? You're supposed to just accept whatever you get, you know. I got both. I was accepting whatever I got. It's a little hot. Do you have any questions about... I wasn't here for the previous one either, I don't think. Do you have anything you want to ask about any of the... I was here for the root one. And I was here for all the taints. But I wasn't here for errors in Dharma. Do you remember that one that's about, you know... training, that inheriting from the Buddha not worldly dharmas but supra mundane dharmas, Buddha dharma rather than material dharma. Do you remember that one? There's a total blank here. It's very beautiful, and I think you can just read it on your own. But any of you who were here and did that together, do you have any question about it? Who was reading that one?
Did
you read Don? No, Don read the previous one.
I read that one.
You read that one?
Yeah.
Were there any questions that you found with it?
I can't
call
them right now.
Okay, yeah. I mean, most of them, if you actually pay attention to it, there's going to be something that will catch your mind. You go back and you look at it, it will open up. You know? These you meditate on and they open up. They open quite a lot. Hi, Claire.
Hi.
Nice to see you. Don't hide back there. I need your wisdom and intelligence shining forth freely so that I don't just fall in love with Terry's vest over and over again.
I'll tell the lady who helped get the material out for me. So.
It's really nice. Okay, so Bayabara is fear. Or dread. I think it's dread. Arava is... maybe it's the other way around. It's been a long time since I knew these things. Thus have I heard. Do you want me to read it? Who was reading it last? Do you want to read it? Okay. Anytime you have a question or I have a comment, we'll just interrupt you, right?
Okay.
You want to turn a little bit so you're facing people more?
Thus have I heard. On one occasion, the Blessed One was living at Sawati in Jetta's Grove, an Upindika's Peak Park. Then the Brahmin, Janasoni, went to the Blessed One and exchanged greetings with him. When this courteous and amiable talk was finished, he sat down at one side and said, Master Gautama, when clansmen have gone forth from the home life into homelessness out of faith in Master Gautama, do they have Master Gautama for their leader, their helper, and their guide? And do these people follow the example of Master Gautama? That is so, Brahman, that is so. When clansmen have gone forth from the home life into homelessness out of faith in me, they have me for their leader, their helper, and their guide. And these people follow my example. But Master Gautama, remote jungle thicket resting places in the forest are hard to endure. Seclusion is hard to practice, and it is hard to enjoy solitude. One would think the jungles must rob a bhikkhu of his mind if he has no concentration.
Okay, did you get that? What is it that was just said there?
He's saying that it's hard to be out in solitude.
Saying more than that. Is he saying that? What's that last phrase?
Concentration.
No? The last phrase? One must...
One would think. One must rob a bhikkhu of his mind.
One would think the jungles must rob a bhikkhu of what?
His mind.
Do you understand that? Isn't that interesting? Isn't that an interesting statement? Do you understand that statement, Don?
I thought I did, but the way
do you understand
going,
that?
I'm not sure.
What do you think it means?
That if you're lost in unfamiliar territory that's also uncomfortable and threatening, that you can get caught in the fear of all that threatens you and lose your sense of yourself within that if you don't have good concentration.
Yeah. But more than that, you can go crazy. It's saying you freak out. You become schizophrenic. You become weird. You're cracked. That's what it's saying. Without concentration. Isn't that interesting? You know all these stories about going off and doing a retreat? And I'm going to just really break through it? There's no respect for the mind in that view. The path of meditation is not a macho trip. It's based on a powerful sense of ability to let go of the world because you don't have to prove anything by the world. So there's nothing worldly that can threaten you. Now that's different, isn't it? Worldly means possessions or positions. The eight worldly dharmas, does that sound familiar?
Mm-hmm.
What are they?
Being famous or not, being of obscurity.
You got it.
Rich.
Between all of you, you got it. Yes! So, the first one is usually the pleasurable and the disagreeable, right? That's water, right? Right?
Yeah.
It's associated with the element water, isn't it? Huh? Second one is?
Loss and gain.
Associated with?
Earth.
Third one?
Fame and obscurity.
No, third, we'll call fire the third one. Praise and?
Blame.
Maybe blame, maybe criticism. More like that. Which is associated with fire and sex, right? You know, when you love somebody and you can really get it up for them and so forth, you know, you think they're absolutely beautiful and then if a little booger hangs out of their nose, it's not so nice. You know, unless you're a very strange person, I understand that. But we're not talking about those types. Right? So that which is agreeable to you in a very passionate kind of to transcend self, you know, going to go beyond, something that's going to lift you beyond the ideal in a very passionate kind of way, or criticism. Do you agree that criticism is very hard to bear?
Yes.
Isn't it? And doesn't it just ruin your desire nature? For wonk. Right? And the last one? Air?
Fame and obscurity.
Fame and obscurity. So here you are, you're out in the jungle, and you have not tamed those four demons that you're born, that are riding on your shoulders. Right? Do you know what I'm talking about? What are they?
Breathing.
Eating, sleeping, sex, and breath. Otherwise known as, or sleeping, eating, sex, and breath, if we can put them in the order that we just did them, otherwise known as the four worldly ideals, which those plus the rejection of them becomes the eight worldly dharmas, which is one of the most important basic Buddhist things to remember. That's what you're trying to do. You're trying to train your consciousness so you're not swayed by whether those eight worldly dharmas are going the way you like them to or not. That your consciousness is not, and you can see why the previous sutra was about who is my heir. Not one who is depending upon me for material support. For material. Right? For the worldly dharmas. But one who finds my support is for Buddha Dharma. So here it is saying, if you go off to become a great meditator all by yourself in a forest, in a jungle, in a location where there are no rules or walls to keep the eight worldly dharmas from snapping at your heels, you're going to lose your mind. Literally. 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 That's what the Buddha is saying here. He's saying, here is the fast track to the career of craziness. Let me suggest this to you. And you know that some of you have done retreats where ambition was high. Haven't you? Did it work? No. Doesn't work, does it? Gets damned uncomfortable, doesn't it? In fact, you start feeling kind of crazy, don't you? And if you've got a skillful teacher, if they see you're really intent on it, they'll let you do it, but then they'll just start intervening, you know? Just start intervening. Because if you're really hot after one of those, there's very little that you can say to somebody. If somebody is really hot after one of the worldly dharmas. You want to do a retreat because you want everything to be peaceful. So you go into retreat, you come out of retreat, and then 6 months later you discover you've got cancer. Congratulations, you figured a way to make everything peaceful. I'm out of here. I'm going to do the big sleep. Do you hear me? So this is a very interesting little line here. One would think the jungles must rob a bhikkhu of his mind if he has no concentration. What is concentration? Concentration is a suppression, temporary suppression of greed, hatred, and delusion, of the poisons. That's what jhana is. Jhana is a temporary suppression of the defilements. So that just for a moment, you're sitting there in the natural state of consciousness. Not dependent on worldly ideals to feel balanced, to feel appropriate, not trying for anything, just present in the state of consciousness. So without concentration, without that ability to put the mind into a state of concentration, that means acceptance, total acceptance of the here and now. Not just the parts of the here and now that you approve of. It's interesting.
It's kind of funny too, though, because when a person is trying to do like this kind of thing, it's always like trying to have control over the situation so you can put cause in.
Right. Yeah. It's a real catch 22, isn't it?
Who pulled the carpet?
But it says don't go into the jungle until you have concentration. Don't go into the jungle until you have concentration. It's basically saying don't treat meditation like it's a competition. I was thinking when I was going to come here, because I haven't been here for about 2 months, and I have missed you. I was also thinking, it's been kind of a relief, because I really don't know anything. And, you know, I always feel, when I'm driving here, what am I going to say? You guys know as much as me. So do you women. I mean, I don't want to be sexist about this. You folks. I always think that. And I realize that that means I'm actually beginning to learn that the only way I'm going to learn anything is if I shut up. And that's a little bit like what this is saying. You know, Buddhism isn't about conversion. It's not about having something that you can offer to someone else. It's about one thing, to be seen for oneself. It's about being present and deciding you're going to let everything go just to see what's real. One would think the jungles must rob a bhikkhu of his mind if he has no concentration. Yeah?
Isn't this the unconscious taken in Buddhism as a symbol for the jungle and the forest? That's the unconscious.
No. You don't really have a sense of the unconscious in Buddhism. What is the jungle in the forest is the eight worldly ideals. That's why I was talking about them. Mm-hmm. That's the real jungle. The eight worldly ideals. Because when the consciousness is no longer caught in them, the eight worldly ideals, or in this case I'll use them as the eight worldly dharmas, or in this case I'll use them as the four worldly ideals, when the consciousness is no longer caught in them, no longer caught in the duality that the four worldly ideals represent, then what is present instead are the four boundless states. The four worldly ideals are not different from loving kindness, compassion, sympathetic joy, and equanimity if the consciousness is not caught in duality. So it's the same state, it's perception that changes. And if I remember, further on in this, he says this, doesn't he? Yeah, right, there it is. On page 104, number 21, he basically says that. I love this. This is, to me, the Buddhist sense of humor. Page 104, number 21. It says, there are Brahmins, some recluses and Brahmins, who perceive day when it is night, and night when it is day. That is to say, they don't even know whether it's day or night. I think that's the Buddhist sense of humor. That's a Buddha joke. Oh, I saw a great bump. I was in Seattle just a while ago. I saw a great bumper sticker. It said, Bush happens. You know, shit happens. Bush happens. It's a new saying. Anyway, sorry. It's nice to be able to name things for what they are. That's what I was thinking. a bodhisattva. George Bush is a bodhisattva. There are Brahmins, some recluses and Brahmins, who perceive day when it is night and night when it is day. Right? So when you perceive the eight worldly dharmas, the four worldly ideals, the four worldly ideals as demonic, they are demonic to you. But when you perceive them as they are loving kindness, compassion, sympathetic joy, and equanimity. It's a perception that changes. The perception cannot change unless the consciousness has enough stillness. And there cannot be stillness or concentration unless there's a sense of wholesomeness. And there cannot be wholesomeness so long as one is in competition. Does that make sense?
What do you mean by competition?
Doing a retreat in order to be better or to be worse or to get away from this or to, you know, so long as it's still caught up in the dual.
But you're going on retreat because you want to.
Presumably one is first going on retreat so one can develop the calm mind, the mind of calm abiding. Mm-hmm. Presumably that should be, that's why I do retreats. Mm-hmm. And if I have the calm abiding, I know I have enough question and enough background in Dharma that if that calm abiding is there, then I can bring the question up. I don't need to go on retreat to develop the question. Not me. And I don't see anybody in this room who does either. I see a lot of people who would like to just ask the great question. But I don't see many people who are home with enough depth so that when the answer comes, they open the door and receive it squarely. Does that make sense to you? It's one thing to ask the great question. It's another thing to be totally open to the answer. Right? So retreats really are to teach oneself how to be open to the answer. Because when that's established, then you can go into any jungle. Which is why the previous sutra about what to inherit from the Buddha, not worldly things. He doesn't say don't have worldly things. He's saying that's not what's valuable about me. It's not my collection of ivories, carved ivory, that you guys should be trying to aspire to. Not my tonkas, you know. Not my chud drums, right? Not my esoterica. Not my tiled wheel of life. Not those things. There's always something wrong with them, isn't there? And then you have to do something with them. The person's going to be looking for it next time they come. As a test of your affection. So you have to buy a bigger house. Just goes on and on and on. You see, there's no concentration there. There's no place to stay. The only time there's a place to stay is if you have nothing to lose. So if you have nothing to lose, that means you're totally concentrated in the present. You let go of the past and you let go of the future. That's what dying does, doesn't it? You have nothing to lose when you're dying, right? Let go of the past, you let go of the future. This is it. One of my last breaths. Maybe this is... Oh, I better... Oh, I can't hold on to it. So you think I've harped on about this long enough? You get that? You get that? This is the crux to the whole sutra, right there. What is it? What is it? It is saying that there is going to be fear and trembling to the point where you'll actually lose your mind. Unless there is concentration. So then, as far as I remember, he goes into what is concentration, doesn't he? Mm-hmm. Okay, let's go.
Before my enlightenment, while I was still only an unenlightened bodhisattva, I too considered thus. Remote jungle thicket resting places in the forest are hard to endure. The jungles must rob a bhikkhu of his mind if he has no concentration. I considered thus. Whenever recluses or Brahmins, unpurified in bodily conduct, resort to remote jungle thicket resting places in the forest, then owing to the defect of their unpurified bodily conduct, these good recluses and Brahmins evoke unwholesome fear and dread. But I do not resort to remote jungle thicket resting places in the forest unpurified in bodily conduct. I am purified in bodily conduct.
So is that interesting? Mm-hmm. Remember the 10 marks of Sila? 3 of them are of body, right? Mm-hmm. Okay.
I resort to remote jungle thicket resting places in the forest as one of the noble ones with bodily conduct purified. Seeing in myself this purity of bodily conduct, I found great solace in dwelling in the forest. I considered thus, whenever recluses or Brahmins unpurified in verbal conduct, unpurified in mental conduct, unpurified in livelihood, resort to remote jungle thicket.
So now it's a switch. It's not the 10 marks of Sila here. It's just unpurified in bodily conduct, in verbal conduct. So he's done bodily conduct, now verbal conduct, so that's the next 4 of the 10 marks of Sila. Do you remember that? Axing, using gossip, slander, right? Remember those? The 4, right? Unpurified in mental conduct, right? And then one more is added. Unpurified in
livelihood.
In livelihood. So this is what you need to do. You need to actually practice the 10 marks of Sila and pay attention to your livelihood. Then you'll find, hey, jhana, piece of cake. But your mind can't settle if you don't have that basis of wholesomeness. If you do not believe that the world is beautiful, you can't relax, can you? Huh? Can't hear you.
No, we know.
No way. You're always looking for what?
The next blow to fall.
The next
question? The next blow to fall, or the next thing to happen.
Yeah.
Always waiting for it. Or looking for the one that's going to satisfy you. So how can you be home? How can you be present? You can't. It's very beautiful, I think. It's very beautiful. Yeah?
Unpurified in livelihood, resort to remote jungle thicket resting places in the forest. They evoke unwholesome fear and dread. But I am purified in livelihood. I resort to remote jungle thicket resting places in the forest as one of the noble ones with livelihood purified. Seeing in myself this purity of livelihood, I found great solace in dwelling in the forest. I considered thus, whenever recluses are Brahmins who are covetous and full of lust, I am uncovetous. With a mind of ill will and intentions of hate, I have a mind of loving kindness. Overcome by sloth and torpor, I am without sloth and torpor. Overcome with restlessness and unpeaceful in mind, I have a peaceful mind. Uncertain and doubting, I have gone beyond doubt. Given to self-praise and disparagement of others, I am not given to self-praise and disparagement of others. Subject to alarm and terror, I am free from trepidation. Desirous of gain, honor, and renown, I have few wishes. Lazy and wanting in energy, I am energetic. Unmindful and not fully aware, I am established in mindfulness. Unconcentrated and with straying minds, I am possessed of concentration. I considered thus, whenever recluses or Brahmins devoid of wisdom, drivelers,
isn't that great?
That word stuck out last time.
Resort to remote jungle thicket resting places in the forest, then owing to the defect of their being devoid of wisdom and drivelers, these good recluses and Brahmins evoke unwholesome fear and dread. But I do not resort to remote jungle thicket resting places in the forest devoid of wisdom, a driveler. I am possessed of wisdom. I resort to remote jungle thicket resting places in the forest as one of the noble ones possessed of wisdom. Seeing in myself this possession of wisdom, I found great solace in dwelling in the forest. I considered thus, there are the specially auspicious nights of the 14th, the 15th, and the 8th of the fortnight.
Basically full moon and new moon. Could all, I think, at the 14th, so it's got to be a half moon too. 14th and 15th. It's like the first, the fourth, 14th and 15th. Depending on, you know, how they count, you know, how they count the moon, the day, the month, whether the full moon is going to be there on the 14th or on the 15th.
Yeah.
On the 8th. So this would be full moon and half moon probably. Yeah.
Now what if, on such nights as these, I were to dwell in such awe-inspiring, horrifying abodes as orchard shrines, woodland shrines, and tree shrines.
Do you understand that as horrifying abodes? Have you seen an orchard? Have you, any of you, ever seen an apple orchard or a cherry orchard?
No. Yeah.
Yeah. What are the trees like?
Scraggly.
They're very pruned it or trained to stay and for producing fruit and not for being trees, right? Make it easy. So they're very misshapen. in moonlight, all by yourself, where the fruit bats are coming, and the animals are coming to eat them, eat the trees, eat the fruit, and whoever's eating the fruit. You get the picture? No street lights, no city sidewalks near. Somewhere off in the forest where there's a good place for an orchard, not too close to town. You getting the idea here, folks? Shrines is where, again, where, you know, if you don't have the overabundance of population that we have here, and there is more understanding of the energy realms, then it's easy to see ghosts and angels and things. And so then, of course, there would be shrines for them, and so then there would be a stronger communion between those energies, between humans and energy beings. But if you have a little bit of fear, you know. I have a friend who, every time she meets someone who has some mental difficulty or a physical difficulty, immediately starts talking to me about the ghosts and the demons that are hanging around that person. It's not the ghosts or demons that are hanging around that person that my friend is talking about, though. You know, a lot of people approach healing like that, like you're exercising something, or that there's something you have to get rid of. Maybe what you really have to do is get rid of your ideas about what you have to get rid of. Maybe that's the most important thing to get rid of. Is that possible? So if you go to a place like this, you know, this is a place that's just absolutely magnificent for growing all of the seeds of your ideas about ghosts and things that go bump in the night, isn't it? Okay, you got that's why that image.
And later, on such specially auspicious nights as the 14th, the 15th, and the 8th of the fortnight, I dwelt in such awe-inspiring, horrifying abodes as orchard shrines, woodland shrines, and tree shrines. And while I dwelt there, a wild animal would come up to me, or a peacock would knock off a branch.
That pretty well rounds out the picture, doesn't it? No? You got it? It's not, oh, what a beautiful peacock.
Oh, no. I was just thinking where a possum scratches the wall.
Or there's a bear. Did I say that? No.
Or the wind would rustle the leaves. I thought, what now if this is the fear and dread coming?
What now if this is the horrible? This is the horrible about to get me. That's what that means.
Yeah.
What now if the... Yeah. And then fill in the blank, yeah. Whatever it is your most fearful and dreaded thing is. You know, that's what that means. That's like, fill in the blank. What now if this is the... coming. <Yeah. laughs> Isn't he brilliant?
Brilliant.
It's beautiful.
I thought, why do I dwell always expecting fear and dread?
Isn't that beautiful? Mm-hmm. Then you see awareness. Then you see somebody not mistaking the day for the night or the night for the day. You don't try to change it, you change your perception. You don't look at an object, you look at the inner. Why do I dwell in fear and dread? Yeah.
I had an experience of this in BC. I was up on my own, walking through the mountains, and I was watching all by myself. And I pitched a tent, and I saw some bear step from be a big black bear or a grizzly. So I fixed the tent up, went to bed, and I heard a scratching and a song. I shone my flashlight out, and there was a bear sitting there just 4 feet away, just sitting looking at me. And I knew he'd shit. And I turned the light off, and I turned it on again, looked closer, it was a stump. You were sitting out in the snow. The whole thing was on. Exactly. It was a bear for me.
And do you know, Morris, how many people in this room have had that experience? Mm-hmm. Bessie, look. Mm-hmm. Everybody has seen that. And that is very powerful. How many of us have turned around and said, this is true? How many of us has thought, oh, what a unique experience, and just made it a story? But how many of us have thought, this is how I create the world? Because that's what the Buddha is doing. He's saying exactly that. Whatever is the fear and dread, why am I choosing to go to fear and dread? Not just on a one-time experience.
I've prepared the ground for. I've prepared the ground for.
Well, I mean, we're not talking about that. We're talking about what the Buddha's reaction is, which is right there. Why do I, what is it, Kathy? Why do I dwell?
Always expecting fear and dread.
Isn't that something? Actually, not just laughing and thinking, oh, it wasn't a bear that time, but immediately turning the consciousness and looking, why do I dwell always on fear and dread? Why? Why do I do that? Why am I holding myself in ransom? And you know what? He really wants the answer to that. Cause, keep reading.
What if I subdue that fear and dread while keeping the same posture that I am in when it comes upon me?
Wow. Let go of the outer and just totally focus on the fear and dread and see how to subdue it. Wow. This would take some calm, don't you think? Even just to ask the question, why do I always dwell in fear and dread, takes a certain amount of calm, don't you think? This is profound. Yeah?
While I walked, the fear and dread came upon me.
You know that there's probably a lot of little moments in between the last sentence and this sentence. He's made this resolution, and then he's carrying on. And then one time while he's walking, probably on the full moon, probably in some orchard, probably some swoop behind him, right? And so he says, while I walked, fill it in. While I walked,
the fear and dread came upon me. I neither stood, nor sat, nor lay down till I had subdued that fear and dread.
I kept walking. I kept the physical body, I kept the focus on the physical, doing what the physical was doing. Do you hear that? I wiggled my toes, whatever. I kept the physical body as the anchor, doing what it was doing. And turn the mind towards subduing, exploring, understanding the fear and dread with interest. With interest. Isn't that powerful? Next.
While I stood, the fear and dread came upon me. I neither walked, nor sat, nor lay down till I had subdued that fear and dread. While I sat, the fear and dread came upon me. I neither walked, nor stood, nor lay down till I had subdued that fear and dread. While I lay down, the fear and dread came upon me. I neither walked, nor stood, nor sat down till I had subdued that fear and dread.
Nice, huh? Keep going.
There are Brahman, some recluses, and Brahmins who perceive day when it is night, and night when it is day. I say that on their part, this is an abiding in delusion. But I perceive night when it is night, and day when it is day. Rightly speaking, were it to be said of anyone, a being not subject to delusion has appeared in the world for the welfare and happiness of many, out of compassion for the world, for the good, welfare, and happiness of gods and humans. It is of me indeed that, rightly speaking, this should be said. Tireless energy was aroused in me, and unremitting mindfulness was established. My body was tranquil and untroubled, my mind concentrated and unified. Quite secluded from sensual pleasures, secluded from unwholesome states, I entered upon and abided in the first jhana, which is accompanied by applied and sustained thought, with rapture and pleasure born of seclusion.
These are the form jhanas he's talking about.
With the stilling of applied and sustained thought, I entered upon and abided in the second jhana, which has self-confidence and singleness of mind, without applied and sustained thought, with rapture and pleasure born of concentration. With the fading away as well of rapture, I abided in equanimity, with mindful and fully aware, still feeling pleasure with the body. I entered upon and abided in the third jhana, on account of which noble ones announce, he is a pleasant abiding who has equanimity and is mindful. With the abandoning of pleasure and pain, and with the previous disappearance of joy and grief, I entered upon and abided in the fourth jhana, which has neither pain nor pleasure and purity of mindfulness due to equanimity. When my concentrated mind was thus purified, bright, unblemished, rid of imperfection, malleable, wieldy, steady, and attained to imperturbability, I directed it to knowledge of the recollection of past lives. I recollected my manifold past lives, that is, one birth, two births, three births, four births, five births, 10 births, 20 births, 30 births, 40 births, 50 births, 100 births, 1,000 births, 100,000 births, many aeons of world contraction, many aeons of Japan, with such an appearance. Such was my nutriment, such my experience of pleasure and pain, such my life term, and passing away from there, I reappeared here. Thus with their aspects and particulars, I recollected my manifold past lives. This was the first true knowledge attained by me in the first watch of the night.
And what does that say? This was the first
true knowledge.
Isn't that interesting? Interesting phrase. Because at other times the Buddha talks about knowledge, with knowledge and wisdom. Now he's saying something else. He's saying this is the first true knowledge. So that's interesting, isn't it? This is a true knowledge then, understanding past lives. That's a true knowledge. In fact, there are eight of them, which I wrote out on a little piece of paper for my morning meditation, because it was very clear to me that, you know, when you see in the Vajrayana, you see the deity sitting on a throne. You know that? You see them sitting on a throne? And the throne is supported by animals, sometimes lions. Or you see the Buddha Rupas sometimes, where he's sitting on a lotus, and underneath the lotus there's these snow lions, like at the Dharma Center, Buddha Rupa, right? No? Or peacocks sometimes.
Elephants.
Those animals are symbols of one of the five Dhyani Buddhas. Lion is a Kshobhya. Right? And there are eight of them pretty well, always. Sometimes there aren't. And the eight represent, in the Tibetan tradition, they're called the eight bodhisattvas. Now remember, when you're talking in the Tibetan tradition with a visualization, what you're doing is you're visualizing what this consciousness really is. You're going into greater and greater levels of understanding the knowledge of this being, of what this being really is. When you get to true knowledges, you're at the level of bodhisattva. The eight bodhisattvas are the eight kinds of clear vision of a Buddha. The first one is direct or true knowledge of supernatural or supernormal power. Direct or true, we can say true or direct, it doesn't matter. He's saying true in this translation. Usually it's translated as direct. Doesn't matter, you can use either word. Direct or true knowledge of supernormal power. That is to say, the consciousness no longer regards objects as real. The consciousness is no longer caught in the impure vision of duality. Because impure vision of duality, believing in subject-object, is what creates the mind that is incapable of understanding that supernormal powers are real. Supernormal powers are, of course, if there is no difference between self and other, if there is no subject-object. Does that make it clear? You sure?
Somewhat.
Is only when there is a sense of isolation or separation that you talk about, yeah, but this is the real world. Yeah, but this is the real world, eh? We got to pay the taxes. As if there is an I who has to do something. Do you understand that? So long as there is an I living isolated, moving through past, present, future, there cannot really be any trust in supernormal powers. Not really. There is always a lingering doubt occurring. Is that clear? When there is a letting go of that separateness from the universe, in jhana, fourth jhana, letting go of that separateness because you're going into a state of concentration where you let all of the levels, the barriers go, there is an opening into just equanimity and aware of cause and effect dancing, no difference, inner or outer. There is direct knowledge of supernormal powers. Or true knowledge. Is that clear? That's the first one. They all follow like that. Direct knowledge of divine ear is the second one. Okay, or 30, or some people call it. I kind of like that. It's on top of your head. You're like an antenna, you know? Like TV antenna. This is satellite dishes.
It's a good movie.
And the next one is penetration of minds. Or you could even say interpenetration of minds. Or you could even say understanding the consciousness of a whole area. Have you read any of Dorothy MacLean, or ever done a workshop with Dorothy MacLean? You know, to hear the angels sing. The woman who discovered how to talk to the angels at Pintorn, who grew the garden at Pintorn, Dorothy MacLean. She used to go and talk to the angels over nuclear power plant, the nuclear power plant at Pickering when she was going to the art school in Toronto. She left Pintorn and then she came back to Canada and she went to art school in Toronto. And she used to go out to Pickering, which is where the big nuclear power plant in Ontario is, and she used to do, you know, harmonize the energy of the angels with the area. Yeah. Because there's only one mind. So penetration of mind. Minds. Next one is recollection of past life. Next one, knowledge of passing away and appearing, or reappearing, of beings. Next one is knowledge of the destruction of cankers. It says that this was the first true knowledge attained by me in the first watch of the night. Ignorance was banished and true knowledge arose. Darkness was banished and light arose. This happens in one who abides diligent, ardent, and resolute. Knowledge of the destruction of the cankers. And then the last two are insight and the supernormal power of the mind-made body. Mind-made body. The Dzogchen people call it the rainbow body. So those are the eight kinds of clear vision of a Buddha. Knowledge indicates the experience of that being known. Knowing, of having an experience of knowledge of true knowledge of supernormal powers, for example. Having an experience of that while you're knowing that that is what you're experiencing it, and then understanding is a sense of understanding that knowledge, understanding why that what was extraordinary knowledge is actually ordinary, seeing that as reality, not as extraordinary. That's what understanding is. Understanding is it's all very ordinary. Of course, that's true. It's not phenomenal. If something is phenomenal, it's not enlightened. It may be a peek into the enlightened state. But understanding of true knowledge means clearly perceiving when it's daytime, it's daytime. When it's nighttime, it's nighttime. When I'm hungry, I eat. When I'm tired, I sleep. Very beautiful. So, of course, there's no problem then in paying taxes or not paying taxes. No one thing is any more or less miraculous than any other. Why would there be a problem with energy? Energy problems have more to do with choices than anything else. Okay? So carry on, madame.
When my concentrated mind was thus purified, bright, unblemished, free of imperfection, malleable, wieldy, steady, and attaining to imperturbability, I directed it to knowledge of the passing away and reappearance of beings. With the divine eye which is purified and surpasses the human, I saw beings passing away and reappearing, inferior and superior, fair and ugly, fortunate and unfortunate. I understood how beings pass on according to their actions, thus. These worthy beings who were ill-conducted in body, speech, and mind, revilers of noble ones, wrong in their views, giving effect to wrong view in their actions, on the dissolution of the body after death, have reappeared in a state of deprivation, in a bad destination, in perdition, even in hell. But these worthy beings who were well-conducted in body, speech, and mind, not revilers of noble ones, right in their views, giving effect to right view in their actions, on the dissolution of the body after death, have reappeared in a good destination, even in the heavenly world. Thus, with the divine eye, which is purified and surpasses the human, I saw beings passing away and reappearing, inferior and superior, fair and ugly, fortunate and unfortunate, and I understood how beings pass on according to their actions.
And I understood. So we've talked about understood. Yeah, there's knowledge and there's understanding. Isn't that what I said just a minute ago? Knowledge is a clearly having an experience. Understanding is noting how that is the rule, seeing how that is true everywhere. Not just in that, but it's universal. I don't think so. I would use understanding. I don't think so, because you're not having an internal or an external. It's a universal consciousness. I think the best word here really is understanding. Two words here. One is knowledge, and the other. Or direct knowledge or true knowledge, and the other one is understanding. And here there is both knowledge and understanding going on, which makes a Buddha.
So it's the particular and the universal happening at the same moment?
And knowledge, this is the definition from, I think this is Buddhadasa from the Visuddhimagga. I can't remember. I didn't get this from the same place that I got the Types of Clear Vision. I think this is from the Visuddhimagga, and I didn't. This was just for my own meditation. Mm-hmm. So I always, I always write little things that I want to make deeper in myself. I put little notes here and there in my sadhanas. Mm-hmm. This is a good point to meditate on this. So I get to this point in the sadhana, and then I read this, and then I meditate on it for a while, So this is one of my latest notes. So knowledge indicate. I know it's a direct quote. I know I wrote this directly, but I think it's from the Visuddhimagga, but I wouldn't bet on it, okay? Mm-hmm. Knowledge indicates the experience of that being known.
So that's a direct physical individual's experience in time and space.
In the experience of whatever is being known indicates the experience of that being known, the experience of it. Mm-hmm. Understanding is in the sense of understanding that knowledge. So from my point of view, that experience that Morris so kindly brought up, and which we all know we have had, and we all hold that as a knowledge, right? Because we all know, geez, one time I looked and it was a bear, and the next moment I looked and it was a stump. And we have that as knowledge, and we go, hayuck, 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 yeah? Or even maybe, geez, I wonder how many other things I'm doing that with. But then we carry on. understanding is understanding then all of the time how perception is working, understanding that knowledge.
And that
so it's ordinary.
And that
in
applies
a way.
To everybody. Like it's not just my.
It's understanding that this is the way consciousness is working. That perception is a major mystery and is a divine power, is a radiant power. That perception is the play of light. And light is a mystery. And so that whenever you meet perception, you are aware that you are standing in the presence of Amitabha Buddha, boundless light. That's understanding. Is that better?
That's way different.
Good.
It opens up a lot of investigation.
Good. I'm delighted because that's exactly what the Buddha's saying here. It opens up the investigation. If you really open it up, not try to keep a bunch of little answers, like a bunch of little isolated knowledges, you never get understanding if you just keep your little knowledges in their little boxes and just take them out for company, you know? You know what I mean? It's a waste of your life's power, you know? Isn't it? Because we all have these insights. Every one of us has been here at least once. Ha! So?
This was the second true knowledge attained by me in the second watch of the night. Ignorance was banished and true knowledge arose. Darkness was banished and light arose, as happens in one who abides diligent, ardent, and resolute.
It's beautiful. This is so beautiful.
When my concentrated mind was thus purified, bright, unblemished, rid of imperfection, malleable, wieldy, steady, and attaining to imperturbability, I directed it to knowledge of the destruction of the taints. I directly knew as it actually is, this is suffering. I directly knew as it actually is, this is the origin of suffering. I directly knew as it actually is, this is the cessation of suffering. I directly knew as it actually is, this is the way leading to the cessation of suffering. I directly knew as it actually is, these are the taints. I directly knew as it actually is, this is the origin of the taints. I directly knew as it actually is, this is the cessation of the taints. I directly knew as it actually is, this is the way leading to the cessation of the taints. When I knew and saw thus, my mind was liberated from the taint of sensual desire, from the taint of being, and from the taint of ignorance. When it was liberated, there came the knowledge, it is liberated. I directly knew. Birth is destroyed. The holy life has been lived. What had to be done has been done. There is no more coming to any state of being. This was the third true knowledge attained by me in the third watch of the night. Ignorance was banished and true knowledge arose. Darkness was banished and light arose, as happens in one who abides diligent, ardent, and resolute. Now, Brahman, it might be that you think, perhaps the recluse Gautama is not free from lust, hate, and delusion, even today, which is why he still resorts to remote jungle thicket resting places in the forest. But you should not think thus. It is because I see two benefits that I still resort to remote jungle thicket resting places in the forest. I see a pleasant abiding for myself here and now. And I have compassion for future generations.
How beautiful. How beautiful. How beautiful.
Indeed, it is because Master Gautama is an accomplished one, a fully enlightened one, that he has compassion for future generations. Magnificent Master Gautama, magnificent Master Gautama. Gautama has made the Dhamma clear in many ways, as though he were turning upright what had been overthrown, revealing what was hidden, showing the way to one who was lost, or holding up a lamp in the dark for those with eyesight to see forms. I go to Master Gautama for refuge, and to the Dhamma and to the Sangha of Bhikkhus. From today, let Master Gautama remember me as a lay follower who has gone to him for refuge for life.
Maybe we can just sit and watch our breath for 5 minutes or so and then have questions. And just see if you can bring your mind out of the past and out of the future, because this isn't a jungle. Just see with the protection of these walls if you can just abide in the present. Just see if you can trust yourself to do that, and don't close your eyes, and don't stick your chin out. Don't make your posture all holy, but keep your spine straight. Pretend that you're happy to be here. Just let your focus go on your breath. And when you notice feeling in the body, just note it as feeling and just say, you know, watch your expectation of it, just name it as feeling, and then name what the mind does with it. And whether it's like or dislike or neither like nor dislike, just notice that. And then go back to the breath. Don't treat it like a subject and an object. Try to see the energy of emotion, the energy of feeling. Try to just keep the mind just present. Don't worry whether you fail or not, just try. Do you have any questions you want to ask them?
On page 103, line number 15, Mary talks about, in desirous of gaining honor and renown, I have few wishes, not no wishes.
Few wishes, yeah. When hungry, I eat. The wishes are, and that's why I say, like that. Then the paying taxes is not an issue. You know, like eating is not an issue. I have few wishes. If I'm hungry and if there's food, I eat. It's like one does not practice being totally apart from the world. That would not be compassionate. Buddhism is called the middle way. So it isn't really a great career for anorexics or anything like that. Any other questions, answers, comments, or complaints? He's pretty clear, isn't he, that Lord Buddha?
Mm-hmm. It's a little easier to read, too, than the King James. True.
I was looking at the Book of Job the other day. I love the Book of Job. I love it. I just think it's so beautiful. That's me, though. So who's going to read the next one, number 5, without blemishes. You're going to read it?
Question talk with it. That in the jhana or in the meditation, you get sort of the temporary
suspension of the defilements.
Suspension or suppression?
It doesn't matter, either one. Suppression is what they usually use.
Yeah. I mean,
because they use the image of mud sinking to the bottom of a pond rather than there being the awareness that there's no such thing as mud.
I guess because of the word suppression, to me, it suggests that you're keeping it down, and then.
But it's true. But it's not willful suppression. Jhana suppresses the state, like just like the state of happiness suppresses grief, doesn't it?
Say that again.
The state of happiness suppresses grief. In your experience, when you're happy, you're not grieving, right?
Okay,
exactly.
In that context, yeah.
So you could say happiness suppresses grief.
Yeah. Right.
Or you could say jealousy suppresses kindness. Okay. Here they're saying jhana suppresses the defilements.
Okay. Because you know there's a whole lot. I
sometimes use the word suspended.
Yeah.
Because it means basically the same thing to me, and it has more of a sense to me of what happens. It's like that is not what's operating, that's suspended. It will operate when the conditions are right, but this condition does not allow that to operate, so that's suspended. Sort of like call waiting, you know. Is that it then? Letting me off easy tonight. So next time is Pat doing the Ananganya.
Where do you wear some clear soap out there?
Sorry?
Wear some clear soap.
Clarasil, yeah. You can tell who's been hanging around with teenagers, can't you?
Yeah. So I'll have to squirt on my nose, clear it off my nose.
And goody, goody, because he's got dribblers in here, too.
Oh, good.
That's a great one. They're all pretty good, though, aren't they? There isn't one I would edit out yet. How about you? I think that Buddha was on to something. I think he had a clue.
Where did you order the full text?
Somebody gave it to me. But I think you can get it from Wisdom, can't you?
Yeah, from Wisdom, yeah. Yeah. Now, when I ordered it, we order from Wisdom online, it's cheaper. They give you a percentage off. Mm-hmm. The A book.
And ask them if they have a mystery which was printed in India, but you can't get here, called The Mandala of Sherlock Holmes, which won all kinds of prizes. It was written by a Tibetan monk, and it's a detective mystery, and it's supposed to be really good, but you can't get it here. You know, Sherlock Holmes and the stories disappeared for 2 years, and then later it says he was in Tibet. So somebody, some Tibetan has picked that up and has written a mystery of what he was doing in Tibet, and of course is a murder mystery.
What's it called again?
The Mandala of Sherlock Holmes. And there's another really great one called The Skull Mantra. But you can get that in Kohl's or any place.
And that's a detective book too?
It's brilliant. It's just brilliant. It's really worth reading. I would lend it to you, but I'm only halfway through, and I might read it again when I'm finished. But you can get it this very moment in Kohl's or places like that, at airports. The Skull Mantra.
Skull Mantra. Basically
fiction?
It's murder mystery. It's based in Tibet, in a prison camp of road builders. And there's... a Chinese official is murdered, and this one particular road camp, it's all Tibetans except for one guy who's Chinese, and he was an investigator of fraud before he was very successful in investigating fraud, so ended up going to the road crew. So he's called out of his... He's quite amazed by the Tibetans, and, you know, one of his members of his road gang is a Rinpoche of some merit. And it's quite beautiful when it just describes how the Rinpoche teaches Dharma after lights are out and there isn't any talking allowed. And what they do for mantras, for rosaries. They make rosaries out of human hair by tying knots in hair. Mm-hmm. And sometimes their thumbs have been cut off so that they can't say rosaries, so they say them with their fingers. It's quite a beautiful text. It's really, it's very worth reading. Good mystery, too. So those are a couple of worthy books. But I'd really like to, if they say they can get, you know, the mantle of Sherlock mm-hmm. Holmes, if you order me a copy, that would be great, because I'd really like to get that one. I'd love to read it. Isn't that just a nice idea?
Mm-hmm.
It is. It is beautiful light in your hearts. It spreads through your body, pours out your pores. Wherever there is suffering, in the three worlds, and in between. Suffering of body, speech, and mind. It's temporarily assuaged. Especially think of beings you wish to pray for, and you think whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together will be shared with all beings, healers, and suffering. Whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together, we share it with all beings, so there is no suffering. Whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together, we share it with all beings, so there is no suffering. Thank you for your great compassion. Thank you so much. Thank you.